logical order.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'd like to first thank the organizers for inviting me here. So indeed, yeah, this talk is very theoretical. So I'm going to tell you something about new kind of topological order in gap systems that was discovered in the last, say, 5 years. And this kind of topological order is very different from, you know, the other talks that you have heard so far. And so this work is done with my student, Sagar Vijay, who is now here as a graduate fellow at KITP, and also with Jongwan Ha, who was a Papadatta fellow at MIT and recently moved to Microsoft in Redmond. So, and in particular, Sagar is a driving force for this project. Everything I'm going to talk about today, you can ask him, he'll know much better than I do. Okay, so yeah, so now you know, the within the sort of the, let me first describe what are the current paradigm of topological order states in both two and three dimensions. In two dimensions, we know that there are point-like excitations that cannot be created by local operators. So these are what can be called topological excitations. And in two dimensions, what's remarkable is that these topological excitations can have, for example, fractional statistics. And they appear in many, many systems, at least theoretically, it's known to exist in many models, fractional quantum Hall states, you know, lattice models such as toric-cold, Levin-Wen model. And I think, at least theoretically, we have a fairly good understanding of the topological order state in two dimensions. And in particular, recently, there's a lot of activity on systematic classification of topological orders in two-dimensional systems based on a certain set of data. Okay. People seem to have a very good idea what this topological data is. And less is known in three dimensions. Now in 3D, there's a strong constraint that particle excitations can, you know, within the current paradigm, that particle excitations can only be bosons or fermions. It's because when we exchange the position of two particles in 3D, viewed from the coordinate frame of the relative position, it's like a particle that's moving around an origin. And in 3D, this kind of world line can be continuously shrink to a point. Basically, exchanging two particles in a three-dimensional system is equivalent of not doing any exchange at all. So that strongly constrains these statistics. But of course, there are a lot of interesting phenomena about topologically ordered state in three dimensions. For example, a 3D generalization of toric-cold or Z2 lattice gauge theory. And in those cases, the non-trivial braiding statistics appear between point particles and the loop excitations. And I'm sure we will hear more in this conference. Now, in both the two and three-dimensional topological state that has been studied a lot so far, all these topological particles, these anions, are mobile particles. Okay, in the generic translationally invariant topological order state, point-like excitations are mobile. They are free to move. And the ability of anions to freely moving around is actually deeply related to the fact that anions are created in a particular way. They are created by string operators. They are created by the at the end of the string operators. So we all know that a moving point generates a line. So this same idea also applies to our thinking about anions. So in particular, if I take a string operator, a long string operator, it creates two spatially separate anions at each end. Now, if we apply a short string operator on an existing anion, then it can annihilate this existing anion and then create another one at the other end. So in doing that, it essentially moved the anion over, let's say, one lattice spacing. So that's why a short string operator is a local anion hopping operator. So the fact that anions are created by string operators immediately implies that anions are mobile particles. And then we can talk about their quantum statistics. So in two dimensions, when we have mobile particles, moving them around can give us fractional phases or abelian particles, and maybe even give you non-abelian statistics. And in 3D, mobile particles can only be bosons or fermions. So, and in particular, you know, in solvable models, one can explicitly write down these kind of string operators that creates a pair of anneals at the two ends. This is a sort of toric code, or equivalently, it's the Z2 topology gauge theory on a lattice. And these string operators are actually very physical. So they correspond to electric field or magnetic flux lines, and the particles at the end of the strings are electric or magnetic charges. So you see that I think historically, these models are very much inspired by ideas in high energy physics. What happens if you put a gauge theory on the lattice? Then you get these kind of electric and magnetic field lines, which in our language, they are string operators. And the magnetic electric charges becomes topological excitations that are anneals. So in 2011, Zhong and Ha really discovered a new kind of very exotic type of topological states that does not fit into this paradigm that I just described. And it's exotic in, from MIT standard. So my colleague, Xiaodang Wen, right, calls these topological states non-liquids, right, non-liquids. So what? Let me first very quickly describe the model. So this is a model defined on a three-dimensional cubic lattice, and each side there are two spin 1/2 objects, and the operator at every side would be a product of two poly matrices. And for example, Z tensor product with identity. For example, here Z is sigma Z, X is sigma X. These are poly spin operators, and so this model has two types of operators associated with every cube. And they are written schematically here. You take the product of all these operators, that's one type of operator, and you take the product of all these side operators, give another cube operator. Now, what's remarkable is that these operators, these two types of cube operators commute with each other, and cube operators on different cubes also commute with each other. So this is a solvable Hamiltonian. And but what Zhang Wan Ha showed is that the excitations in this model are point objects, but they cannot move by themselves. If I have a spatially separate excitations, the point excitation here cannot move individually, even under generic perturbations. So the model is translationally invariant, but a point excitation cannot move by itself. And this, since then, there's more models of this type has been found. And a generic feature, it seems that these kind of phenomena really is only appear in lattice systems in three dimensions. It seems not captured by a quantum field theory, at least not a quantum field theory of conventional type, defining a continuum space-time. And later I'll give some argument why this is the case. So this is the outline of my talk today. What we tried to do in the last 2 years is to bring some order into this kind of exotic topological states. We try to have a better theoretical understanding in a more systematic way. And so these kind of excitations that are fractional excitation, meaning that they cannot be created by any local operators, and these excitations cannot move, unmovable, so we call it fractals. It's only a fraction of physical particle, but we cannot talk about statistics because they are not even free to move. So the anneal, which originally was referring to the statistics of particles, can be of any type. So they do not apply to these particles, these point excitations. So we call it fractals. And because of this connection between anneal and the string that I just described, the fact that if point excitations are created by string operators, they are necessarily mobile. Then it immediately says that for these fractals, they can only be created by non-string operators, right? So it's no strings attached. And now, what's the difference between a string operator and a non-string operator? A string operator only has two ends, so that's why anneals are always creating pairs, particle, antiparticle at the two ends of a string. But if we can find that models in which point-like excitations can only be created in multiples more than two, creating in multiples of three or four, that definitely created by non-string operators, and then they cannot move individually. Okay. And in Haas model, the operator that creates these fractals is an operator that's defined on a fractal-shaped object. It's a Sierpinski triangle, whatever. Yeah. Okay, so it's very exotic, right? But I'll tell you some of the models that we stumbled onto in the last 2 years. And in our models, these operators that create these excitations are very simple. They're just membrane operators. Okay, instead of creating particles at the end of strings, we create particles at the corners of membranes. And such particles are not free to move. They're unmovable. And that'll be the first part of this talk, to basically give you some models and intuitions. And then in the second part of the talk, I'm going to describe our very recent work on the archive. We basically find that there's a simple way of understanding these fractal topological phases from a duality. So this duality is basically a generalization of the Wegener duality that relates the toric code to the icing model, the classical Z2 symmetry breaking. So we have a similar effect here. If we take a system that shows a particular type of symmetry breaking, subsystem symmetry breaking, I'll explain what it is, and then a duality will turn it into a fractal topological order state. And this duality I can show step by step at the level of a lattice model. And with this duality, it leads to some interesting question, still open question, whether there's some notion of quantum glass that appears in these systems. It's because systems with this extensive set of symmetries are discussed a lot in the classical glass literature. Whereas here, we have a duality of these quantum systems with subsystem symmetry. So then, is there a connection to quantum glass? So let me describe the first model that we found. So this model is written in terms of Majorana fermions on the cubic lattice. So at every site, there's a Majorana fermion. There's only one type of operator, which is a product of 8 Majorana fermions on a cube. And this operator applies to all the blue cubes, not to the white cubes, but only to the blue cubes. And because of all these blue cubes, they either are non-overlapping or they share two sites. All these operators commute with each other. So the ground state basically satisfies that this operator On has eigenvalue plus 1 for all the cubes. And an excitation corresponds to some cubes where the operator O has eigenvalue minus 1. Right? So this is the solvable model. Both the ground state and all the excitations are exactly known. Then what's remarkable is that the cube excitations these point excitations are immobile. They cannot move, they are fractals. And they are created by a membrane operator, which is just the product of these Majorana operators on this two-dimensional sheet. So you can verify that easily that this two-dimensional membrane operator commutes with all the cube operators in the interior of these membrane, as well as on the edges of the membrane. Because, for example, on this edge, it involves 2 Majorana operators, and that commutes with this cube operator. So this membrane operator only anti-commutes with the 4 operators, the 4 cube operators at the corner of this membrane. Okay. So basically, it acting this membrane operator on the ground state creates 4 cube excitations at the corners.
Can you say what your model does if you do it in 2 dimensions?
So in 2 dimensions, this model is not a commuting Hamiltonian anymore, because Okay. So this is again, this already give you that a strong indication that these cube excitations are fractals because they are created by membrane operators and they are created in groups of 4. Okay. And in fact, we can show mathematically that there's no string operators in this commuting Hamiltonian that can create 2 excitations at the ends. So these cube flips can only be created by membranes, not by strings. There's also a simple physical argument that one can appeal to. So imagine that I want to add a fermion into this model, and the addition or removal of a fermion is represented by a Majorana operator acting on the ground state. And suppose, for example, I add a fermion at this site J, and this Majorana operator anti-commutes with the 4 cube operators that share this corner. In other words, adding a single fermion creates four adjacent cube excitations. Okay, a single fermion is equal to a composite of four cube excitations. Now, imagine, let me prove by contradiction, that if the cube excitations are mobile particles, then their statistics can only be boson or fermion. And in either case, taking four identical excitations, it has to be a boson, it cannot be a fermion. So this runs into contradiction, and this is solved because these cube excitations are not mobile particles. You cannot define their statistics. So we see that the fracton basically evades the rule of quantum statistics in three dimensions. And then we can also talk about some composites of these single cube excitations. For example, if we take two cube excitations that are adjacent, that share an edge, so this object can move along the one-dimensional line that's defined by the common edge. And you can see that because if I take a product of these Majorana operators on the line, it commutes with all the cube operators in the Hamiltonian except at the two ends where you create these two cube excitations. So these two cube excitations are free to move along this line, so because they are associated with the string operator. But they cannot turn around the corner, because if you try to turn around the corner, you see that a bented string operator does not commute with the Hamiltonian anymore. It creates additional cube excitations at the corner. Okay? So these particles are dimension one particles. They only move along a line, but cannot turn. And then we can look at two cube excitations that are one lattice constant apart, let's say like this. And then, you know, these objects are free to move in the two-dimensional plane. And now you see that taking two string operators, then they create these kind of excitations. But now these two parallel string operators commuted with Hamiltonian in when they bend. Okay, so that's why these, but they cannot, you cannot make these like a pair of excitations, they cannot hop along the z direction, they can only move in the xy plane. If you take another pair of excitations that are displaced in the x direction, you know, they can move in the yz plane, but not in the x plane. So in this case, we see that fractons can be regarded as half of a 2D anion, right? So the particles that are free to move in two dimensions, okay, you can think of it as a two-dimensional anion, and that is a pairs of cube excitations, but the single cube excitation is half of that, so it's half of a 2D anion. So this says basically fractons, you know, sometimes you can think of it as you can further divide anions into halves, etc. You can further fractionize anions in the 3D system. And also, you know, there's this, so one feature that is present in our model that's absent in Zhang-Wang Ha's model is the following. Like in Zhang-Wang Ha's model, all the point excitations, topological excitations, are immobile, unmovable. Whereas in our model, we see that the fundamental excitations, a single cube excitation is frozen, it cannot move, but composites of these excitations, they sometimes can move in one-dimensional line, some of them can move in a 2D plane. So these are sub-dimensional particles. So we have a coexistence of fractons and some sub-dimensional particle in our model. And so these are the two types of fracton topological order we know. In we call it type 1, type 2, for the lack of better names. In type 1 models, the fractons are basically created by membrane operators, and I've described these, one of the models of Majorana fermions, and recently we also have various spin models, which I'll describe a little bit later. Also, there's earlier work by a model written down by Claudio Chamon and analyzed correctly by Bravi, Limas, and Tahal. And all these models fall into this first type, point excitations created by at the corner of membranes. Whereas Zhang-Wang Ha's model is in some sense even more exotic. And here, these particles are created by these fractal operators. Okay, so this is the first part of this talk. And now let me move on to the second part. You know, can we have a more systematic approach of understanding these fracton bases? And So it turns out all the currently known fracton models can be obtained from a simple duality transformation on quantum models with subsystem symmetry. Basically, these subsystem symmetry are intermediate between a global symmetry that, for example, if I flip all the spin in the IC model, the system remains in Hamiltonian, remains invariant. These are global symmetries. On the other extreme limit, we have local symmetries that are gauge-like. The subsystem symmetry is basically intermediate between that. If we flip, let's say, all the spins in a two-dimensional plane on a three-dimensional lattice system, so this is a symmetry associated with a two-dimensional submanifold, right, a subsystem of a full system. So this can be called subsystem symmetry. So this duality between systems with subsystem symmetry and fractal topological order is very, very convenient and very helpful because it tells us there's a deep connection between these two very different phenomena. And also subsystem symmetry, as I said, is studied in a classical context in the glass community. These are so-called glass models without disorder. So this really intrigues the question that can fractal topological states exhibit some quantum glass behavior? It also, related to that, it tells us it may be useful to thinking about the phase transitions. And in this talk, I'll show that they certainly provide a very simple recipe for making any fractal model that as you wish on any lattice that you like. And many of these fractal models only require four-body interactions, so they are as simple or as complicated as toric code models, which also involve four-body operators. And I should emphasize, yeah, this is really driven by Sagar Vijay. So let me first review what we know about the duality. In the context of this Ising model, this duality is Wegener duality is long known. Basically, we take a transverse field Ising model. It can be on either on 2D or 3D lattice, and we just rewrite the variables using a non-local transformation. Let me define new spin variables that are living on the edges of the original lattice. The new spin variable is a product of two spin operators. And then with this transformation, the spin-spin interaction become a single site operator. And then the transverse field, which flips a single spin here, would flip four sigma spins on the four edges that come out of this flipped spin, right? Because sigma terms, it changes the value of the spin bilinear on the four edges. Once you flip the spin, you create four excitations. So that's why the transverse field operator becomes a product of four edge spins on the cross, right? On this cross. This is a cross operator, or star operator. Yes, star operator. Now, but there is a one price you pay when you do this transformation of variables. The original spins are all independent, but there are twice as many edges as the number of sites. So these edge spin variables are not all independent. There's a constraint that if you take the product of the four edge spins around each plaquette, you get identity, right? Because each sigma is a product of the two spins at the end. So if you make a product of sigmas around a plaquette, all the tiles cancel out and you get identity. So that's why with this Wegener duality, the ordered and disordered phases of the IC model in the transverse field maps onto a trivial phase at small h and maps into a topological order state at large h. Okay, so this duality is in some sense quite magical, right? It turns the phenomenon of symmetry breaking into the phenomenon of topological order. So once after duality, basically there's no local order parameter to distinguish the trivial and the non-trivial phase. So you only have a topological order or not, right? So symmetry breaking is turned into topological order under this Wegener duality. So, okay, so now let's do something in the same spirit, okay? But let's choose a different model. Let's choose this model, which is a plaquette Ising model. It consists of four spins. As again, spins are placed on a three-dimensional qubit lattice, and there's a product of the spin operator on every plaquette, okay? It's a part of the four spins on the corners of every plaquette, okay? And then we add a transverse field. So without the transverse field, this model as a classical statistical mechanics model was studied for quite some time in a small community, and this model shows a partially ordered ground state at low temperature. Basically, this model has a planar symmetry, if you flip all the spins on any plane, okay, or any individual plane, you know, in the XY plane, YZ, or ZX plane, this Hamiltonian is invariant. Okay, so in the high temperature, you have a disorder phase, but at low temperature, there's a partially ordered ground state with extensive ground state degeneracy. So, you know, you can start with the ground state where all spins are polarized, but you can flip all spins on the, any plane. You get a new ground state. That's why there's 2 to the 3L fold degeneracy. So we now add a transverse field to this model. So turning it into a quantum model, and we study its behavior at the zero temperature. And again, you see when H is small, we have this partially ordered ground state that shows this planar symmetry breaking. And at a very large field, we get a paramagnetic state. That's boring. Now this model, you wouldn't necessarily pay much attention to it because this model is fine-tuned. You know, all these weird phenomena like partially ordered ground state is fine-tuned because in reality, the two-body spin operators should be allowed. There's no reason that you exclude two-body operator and you only keep the four-body operator. And once this two-body interaction is included, these planar symmetry is explicitly broken, and in the low temperature or zero at the small H limit, we get the global Ising order. However, now let's do the duality transformation. Okay, we place a new spin variable at the center of each plaquette, right? Because this interaction term is associated with each plaquette. So we put a new spin in red dots here at the center of every plaquette, which is the product of these four taus. And then the interaction term becomes a single side operator, and the spin flipped operator now become a complicated 12-body interaction. And one way to view it is to just draw another lattice, draw the dual lattice. You know, we're not doing any more transformation, but just redraw the lattice. We think of these new spins as living on the edges, okay, instead of living on the center of the faces. And if in this, this is to give a better visualization, then this operator A, okay, which is the corresponding H term, basically corresponds to flipping all the spins on the edges of every cube. Okay, so this is a cube operator. A is a cube operator. Now this transformation, again, there are much more red sites than the blue sites, right? So there are constraints, there are local constraints. And you can easily work it out that for associated with every cross, okay, in this representation, there's a constraint, okay? Every four spins that form a star or a cross, there's a constraint that the product of sigma z has to be equal to 1. So this constraint you can think of as generalization of Gauss law, right? In gauge theory, you always place variables on links, and then the constraint becomes, you know, Gauss law. The divergence of electric field is 0. Here, I'm not placing the new variables on edges, but on the center of faces. So what we get is something different. It's still constrained, but it's not Gauss law. And this model, once we do this transformation, this model consists of basically operator associated with cubes. It comes with constraint, which I can write at the energy cost associated with crosses. So we call it the X cube model. So this model is a generalization of lattice gauge theory, and it's different, emphasized, it's different from the so-called higher form gauge theory in the high energy community. And the phenomenology is, of course, very different as well. Okay, so then again, in the limit where the transverse field is large, you know, what is basically after this transformation, right, so we can look at the two phases, the large H phase and the small H phase in the original model. The large H limit, the paramagnetic phase before the duality, now turns into a topological order phase, okay, with fractal excitations. And planar symmetry breaking phase of the original model now turns into a trivial phase. Okay, it's again. Now, after this transformation, we see something interesting, that all those dangerous terms that we can add to the original model before duality, this two-site, this neighboring two-spin interaction term, after this duality transformation become non-local, so they can no longer be added. So that's why these fractal phases is truly robust. They're robust against all kind of perturbations. And this also tells you that as a function of H, this phase transition on the dual model, on the fractal model side, is a robust phase transition. It's equivalent to the original planar symmetry breaking transition in the original model, but now it has an advantage that it's robust. So now why fractons appear? Because the fracton phases appear in the large H limit, let's first look at the excitation spectrum before the duality. Now, this duality preserves the spectrum in the bulk. So every excitation basically takes, they have to appear on both sides of the duality transformation. So before the duality, in the large H phase, the spins are pointing along the transverse direction, and the excitations are created by the first term, the four-body sigma z, tau z interaction. It basically creates, it creates four spin flips on every plaquette, right? So if I now generate a sequence of these, if I take a product of these plaquette operators on the membrane, you see that the spin excitations are only created at the corner, right, in the original model, because basically the spin flips in the paramagnetic phase before the duality are created in group of four, and implies that excitations in the topological order state after duality are also created in multiples of four. And you can explicitly show here that and these excitations are located at the corners of these membrane operators, so they are fractons. And so that's the basic the essence of these duality transformation. I've shown an example, but you can actually now take any model you like. For example, this is another example where we have Ising spins, but interaction are defined on tetrahedrons instead of the plaquettes. And again, this model has this planar symmetry, flipping all spins on planes, leaves it invariant. And again, the duality procedure generates fractal models. And in fact, we have a very precise statement that what kind of planar symmetry breaking is guaranteed to generate fractal phases after the duality. And the short answer is most of the time. Okay, most of the time, it works. Also, one can look at the Haas model in this new perspective. The model is very complicated, I shown you on the earlier for Haas model. In fact, can be understood as a duality transformation on a much simpler Ising model. Okay, after duality, this Ising model with just four spin interactions defined on two sets of tetrahedrons generated the Haas model. And there's for this particular model, there's also related work from the understanding this from the perspective of tensor networks. And I'm running out of time. Let me just say that picture is worth a thousand words. That all these models that you can write down with planar symmetry, associated with planes, associated with fractal or operators, after duality they turn into fractal models. And one can also go through the mass, which is invented by John Van Haar, and then applied to these models by Sager. And it turns out that within these commuting Hamiltonians, there's a fairly a precise mapping between the physics of topological order and the mathematics associated with polynomials, algebraic methods of polynomials. You can represent all the terms in the Hamiltonian by polynomials. And you can ask questions like, is the ground state with priority boundary condition unique or not in terms of the properties of these polynomials? And let me use just 1 minute to advertise some more recent developments that's still ongoing. Starting from the Z2 gauge theory in 3D, we have electromagnetic charges and flux lines. And people later, like Leon and Mike Hermely and Matthew Fisher, studied the U1 version, the rotor version of these discrete models, and that leads to this Coulomb phase with electric charges, magnetic monopoles, as well as gapless photons. So then the question is, I've described some generalization of these discrete lattice gauge theories in which Gauss law appear very differently, and these models give you fractons as generalized charges, but is there generalization of this U1 type of gauge theory? And this actually is a very interesting problem. In fact, the U1 generalization of the X-cube model that I described was studied by Chen Ke-xu and Chong Jin-wu. I think both of them are here. In this case, the Z2 version that I described, the XQ model, give you a gapped topological ordered fractal phase. But the U1 version of that same model does not have topological order. It's gapped and it shows a crystalline order. Now, there's a very recent work from Michael Preko at MIT. It's very interesting. His motivation is to study the high rank tensor fields and the latest version of that. And then he found that, interestingly, in these models, they have a gapless neutral excitations, which can be regarded as generalization of photons. And they have some charge excitations, which are nearly fractons, but not, because in these models, that the fractons, the charge excitations are weakly confined. Recently, with Sagar Vijay, we found a new model where there are both neutral excitations that are gapless, and the gap is on lines in momentum space instead of points. And moreover, the charge excitations in this new model are truly deconfined fractons. The energy cost does not increase with distance. And this is the last slide, but basically, to summarize, I've shown you a variety of models that have these point excitations that cannot move, these fractons, I think, at least to me, particular useful way of understanding these fractal phases is through a duality with models that exhibit subsystem symmetry breaking. And this duality gives us at least a partial classification and a theoretical characterization of these used to be considered as very, very exotic phases, but now we see that it's really quite simple. And what I think is most interesting is the connection to quantum glass. And there are many open questions. This is a very new area, I think. For example, one can ask, what are the topological data to describe these fractal phases? In the same sense, can we ask that we can classify this topological order in 2D by so-called SNT matrices? Are there a set of data for that? I think there's very recently I learned that Mike Hermelian and Chen Xie has some interesting work in that direction, as well as Sagar, some independent work. These are fractals. Originally, when John Wang Ha proposed his model, he was motivated to search for a robust quantum memory that can self-correct errors even at finite temperature. Can we get a better quantum memory out of these things, and can we use it for quantum computation? And finally, you see some of these models only require four-body interaction, or the U1 version only require two-body interaction. So can we have material additions in the future? Okay, thank you.
Oh yeah, I have several questions. So first of all, sorry. Okay, it's one question. Yeah, it's one question with three parts.
Wonderful.
So part one is that so you say those fractionalized. Okay, so you divide one minor fermion into four different parts, and each of them cannot move independently.
Yes.
But can they still rotate?
They still rotate.
Like the topological spin can be defined without moving the particle. You can just spin it, right? You can define a topological spin out of it.
Yeah, that's a good question. So suppose I have an isolated fractal here. Other fractals are far away.
Yeah.
Right. Your question would be: is there a way of defining rotating this?
Topological spin, for example, analog of topological spin. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't thought about it. It's an excellent question. Normally, how do you rotate a particle? You mean an anion? How do you rotate an anion?
Do the space rotation, right? Just do the space. It's like a fermion. You will rotate by 2 pi, you gain a minus one. The boson will rotate by 2 pi, does not gain minus one. So that's
I don't know the answer.
Yeah, that's fine. So part of the talk you said that part two. So actually, so when two of those fractons attach together, they can move in a two-dimensional plane?
Yeah, when they are arranged in a certain way, when they are one lattice apart.
I know, yeah, but then can we talk about statistics between two of these primers?
Yes, yes, actually, yeah, I have it here. Yes, the second question. Yeah, here. So you can take these two fractons and another two fractons. They're offset by one plane. And then they have a pi mutual statistics associated with each other. And you can see that easily because if you have these fractons, right, and if you want to move in a plane around, let's say, some circle, right, then the operator that moves them is a membrane, is a part of all these Wilson lines on the edge. You can equivalently rewrite it as the product of all the cube operators in the interior. So when you have additional cube excitation in the interior, they pick up a minus one phase.
But is it consistent with the fact that they fuse into a Majorana fermion? Because four of these things fuse together is a Majorana fermion, right?
Yeah.
So this.
I didn't go through the details. You see the different colors. So what happens is that there are really four types of a single cube excitation. Even though all the cubes at the physical level they are all equivalent, but you can never turn cubes, let's say, of B color into a cube of a C color. They are different anions. They are different fractons. They are different fractons. It's like you know. In these, something like this of this flavor, right? It's in this QTIF, the honeycomb lattice model. Right? You can have E particles on E and M particles that are on different plaquettes, adjacent plaquettes, right? All the plaquettes are identical in the Hamiltonian, but the excitations are different, right? One is E, one is M. So here, basically, there are four types of cubes. You know, they are arranged in this way with different colors, and then we repeat. So a single fermion corresponds to four cube excitations A, B, C, D together of different species. And the object that I said that move free to move in the plane are two cube excitations of the same species.
So it's analogous to the fact that E and M, they have an auditory code, E and M have a mutual semion, but when they fuse together, become a fermion. So that's actually your fermion.
You can think of that way, yeah. Although here, of course, it's fractons.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have part three, sorry.
Moving on, I'm sorry.
What are the glassy features at finite temperature?
What are the
glassy features in this model at finite temperature? Are there?
We don't know. I mean, this is an open question. So the reason I made a connection to glass is the following. I can illustrate here, right? So this model, like X cube model, right? There's a transverse field, let's say in this direction. In a two-dimensional parameter space, there's a transverse field, and then there's temperature. When the field is zero, this is a classical model. As a function of temperature, people studied it before, that there seems to be a glass phase. So
there's a glass, finite temperature glass
phase. Finite temperature glass phase, yeah, meaning that the dynamics are extremely slow. And then the question is, what about on this axis? Uh-huh. Right, so on this axis, you can think of it as a thermal fluctuation. Mm-hmm. On the h-axis, you can think of it as quantum fluctuation. Mm-hmm. So it's an open question. Yeah, but I think this is... I think it's an extremely interesting question associated with these models. Yeah, class.
Yeah, so you know, this membrane operating with the four Majoranas in the former, is the energy cost of that guy?
Finite.
But
yeah.
It goes over the area.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. That I should emphasize it. Yeah. So you know, that's the interesting thing about usually if you have a membrane operator, right, in the non-topological phase. The energy cost goes as the entire area. Now, in the two-dimensional topological order states, right? Sometimes the membrane or 3D phases, the membrane operator, the energy cost can go as the perimeter, right? The perimeter. But here, the energy cost only is all finite. You know, it only costs energy at the corners. So that's very unusual. Corners cannot move individually. No.
If they can move in the correlator.
They can move in the correlator. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. But that, you know, if you have a local operator, suppose these particles are very far apart from each other, right? You can apply some local operator trying to move it. You know, you have to go to very high order perturbation, you know, to generate a membrane operator from the local operators in order to move them. That's why they can move in the correlator way, but dynamics will be extremely slow. Yeah. In some way that one can talk about. Oh, by the way, let me just add that this is also never mind.
I wanted to ask if there are any of these models or have the chance to be in some way similar to a non-abelian phase in the sense that we can't really talk about statistics exactly, but you can ask for a fixed set of particles.
Yes.
Can there be, you know,
yes,
a
actually we have
Hilbert
a,
space, which
we have a model. We have a model that in 3D that we have point excitations that they cannot move, but they carry internal degeneracy, mm-hmm. and the internal degeneracy cannot be lifted by local perturbations. So this is an analog of non-abelian anneal in 3D. Yeah.
So is there then some, you know, something that takes the role of braiding to move you within the internal Hilbert space?
I mean, we can always write down, I guess we can always write down something like this membrane operator,
yeah.
which, you know, it's a highly non-local, but we can write down that and we can do braiding. You can by applying non-local operators, you know, some membrane operators.
Loop operators are not local.
Yeah, right. But yes, there is a fractal analog of non-abelian anneal in 3D. Again, you see that fractal, you know, it evades the rule of statistics. But usually you'll say all this is impossible. But, you know, making the particle localized, you know, yeah, evades all these rules.
Thank Liang again, and we'll move on to the next speaker.